Hey, all you growers out there, Jordan River here. Thank you for tuning into GrowCast today. We have a very special guest for you today, Ellis Smith. I really enjoyed talking to this guy. You may know him from Sohum Soils. They're doing very well over there, the super soil company. And he's here to talk today about all his work in consultation and with living soil and talk about some of the most high leverage grow strategies he has, as well as some of the most common mistakes he sees people making. So it's a great grow episode, and we cover a lot of different territory. I know you're going to love it. Before we get started, though, let's give a little love to one of our amazing vendor partners, Cultilux Horticultural Lighting, everybody. Just go to cultilux.com, C-U-L-T-I-L-U-X.com. Promo code GROWCAST10 gets you 10% off, and mygrowpass.com members get 25% off all their lighting, and they're giving away a fixture to a lucky member. That's right, everybody, Cultilux. They are the industry-leading manufacturers of CMH fixtures and bulbs. They have 315 watts, 630 watts, and brand new 1,000 watt double-ended CMH bulbs that you are going to love. You've heard all these episodes on lighting I've done. CMH is a great option, guys, especially if you're going after that terpene profile. Some people are really loving it and loving mixing spectrums. If you've been thinking about giving it a try, today is the day. Cultilux.com, GrowCast10 is the promo code to save 10% just for listening. And when you're ready to save 25%, become a member at MyGrowPass.com. Go and try it out, everybody. Cultilux. Let's see here. Nothing else on the list for now. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I hope you're killing it in your grows. All right, everyone, without further ado, enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, tell a friend about GrowCast, tell a grower about GrowCast, check out Rob Smith's show, The Homegrown Helpers, and my new show, The Coffee Health and Science Podcast. I appreciate you guys tuning in to all our other ancillary shows. Today we have a wonderful guest who I've been waiting to speak to for quite some time. We have from the American Cannabis Consulting Company, as well as Sohum Living Soils. I know you guys are big fans of them. Ellis Smith is on the line. How you doing, Ellis?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today.
And you're doing your own podcast now, is that right? Why don't you give that out so my listeners can go give you a listen?
Yes, you can see me on cannabisradio.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. It's called The Cutting Edge of Cannabis. And then I'm also on cannabistech.com as well, doing one called The American Cannabis. So I've got two different shows. Check them out. Tune in. Love to have you guys' perspective. We're doing a lot of cool stuff on technology and growing and you name it, man. They're pretty fun.
Oh, I love that, man. There's so many cool niche cannabis podcasts. That's really cool. Best of luck to you on your pods. Everyone, go give it a listen and a subscribe right now. You've got a lot going on. Why don't we start with what my listeners are probably most familiar with, Sohum Soils. Now, this is your company, is it not?
Yep. So Sohum Soils is, I can't take full credit for it, but Sohum Soils was a recipe that some friends of mine used to use in Humboldt County starting in about 2000, 2001. Nice. I started working with them back around 2004 to get my hands on the recipe with them out there and brought it indoors. Mm-hmm. To be used from about 2004 and all the way up to today now. So it's been a long, long relationship with the soil. The original name, and I laugh when I say this, was called the Sohum Bammer Gold, and it stands for Southern Humboldt Alabama Gold. I'm a southern boy from Alabama. I want to pay tribute to my homage and my buddies who actually I went to Auburn University with. We were using that recipe, but also we were using it in Southern Humboldt County around Garberville, California.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Hot spot up there. Yeah, man. So much to ask. You know, it seems like you guys are picking up a lot of steam. Sohum Soils comes up a lot when I see Facebook group posts on, hey, where can I buy a living soil, a super soil? Have you guys been feeling the traction of the regenerative soil movement? Are you having some good success?
You better believe it. You know, we were very fortunate in 2017, High Times awarded us the Wolf of the Year. That really kind of brought our name to life pretty quickly just because of the readership they get. And we've been able to use that platform since then to really take advantage of putting out a quality product and having great success with people using it. And it's been, every day, literally, there's a big meeting I just stepped out of this morning to come and do this call around so long. I've got five of my big heads at the table really understanding the next growth pattern that we're experiencing right now and how we manage it.
Damn, so, that's cool,
man. This whole movement is taking on. You're seeing a lot of people using No Chill and using our soul as a base and foundation for that. Seeing a lot of people just really enjoying the ease and simplicity of using Just Add Water soils. And really, the main reason why most people like it because of the end result of the product. The taste and flavor is phenomenal. You know, it really brings out a good experience, which is what it's all about.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hearing, even from the most adamant, you know, synthetic growers, cocoa growers, whatever. Taste, flavor, and then I'd also say an ancillary trait, aroma, seems to really excel in these living soil types of grows. Now, is it true that you can't use the word super soil? I know that was really what the general term was for this style of growing, but my understanding is that didn't Scotts or some company trademark the term super soil? Can you not use it?
That I'm not sure. You know, I'm not aware of that. I think it's potato, potato. You hear so many different references to it, from living soils, super soils, to TLO for true living organics, you know, for a reference to the Rev out there, who, you guys haven't read the Rev,
right?
Books TLO. That's really the backbone foundation of a lot of my experience and knowledge when I started really getting into this many, many moons ago. And so, you know, I want to pay tribute to those folks out there that really helped pave the way, you know, and those are great, great resources. But I haven't heard that Scotts have done that. And so if they did, I got a middle finger in the air to those boys, because I'm like, whatever, super soil, you know, like, we'll call it what we want to, you know, potato, potato. And I think from the general standpoint, our industry really knows what you mean when you start using these terminologies.
Yeah.
I've kind of now started calling it free range or cage free cannabis. People laugh at me and think I'm crazy, but that's my new term, and what I call it, cage free range cannabis.
I like that, man. That's recognizable. That's clever. I definitely like that. So SoHumSoils.com, everybody can check it out. And you've heard the work that we're doing with SoHum Soil. You can save 10% just by using promo code GROWCAST, listening to this show. Is it GROWCAST10? Let me look this up really quick. And then, of course, MyGrowPass.com. You can get 20% off all your living soils. Super excited about everything you guys are doing over there. So yeah, SoHum Soils, promo code GROWCAST10 to save 10% just for listening to this show. So really cool, man. I'm really excited about what you're doing. Please keep us up to date on all things living soil. Maybe we can do an episode together down the road and dive a little deeper into the production practices and all that. But today I wanted to focus more on what I understand is your newer project, your new cannabis consulting company, right?
Yep. So, we're an ever-evolving company and really looking at the industry from different lenses and different perspectives, and really going at the marketplace from now from an ownership standpoint.
So, let me ask you this. I feel like anyone who has a cannabis product kind of de facto becomes a consultant. Do you know what I mean? Like, were you just getting a bunch of messages from people in their grows and you said, I have to do this?
Well, how I got into it, back, I had my first dispensary and grow in 2010 in Boulder, Colorado, called the Village Green Society. And I ran that business for 3 years with a handful of partners. And it was kind of a shotgun wedding relationship that I got into that ownership structure with. They changed the rules on us. We couldn't grow in our houses anymore. You had to get into a commercial industrial setting. So I got into a relationship, and after the first year and a half of being business with these people, there were two couples, they were going through a divorce, and so I had to jump ship. It was too toxic, and so by default, I got out of that relationship with license ownership and started the consulting side of American Cannabis Consulting, really, as a result of that, as Massachusetts and Connecticut and Florida and Michigan or Minnesota were all coming online at that time, and there was a need for people who had experience, and we had it for the last 3 years.
100%. So you saw the market gap and you dove in with American Cannabis Consulting.
Correct.
Let's give out the URL. Is it AmericanCannabisConsulting.com?
Yep, that's right.
Okay, man. Well, let's dive right in. What have you seen? What's going on out there? I know that I feel the general skill level of the average grower is always on the rise. As you said, new spaces come online and they seem to face a lot of the same beginner challenges. But you personally, What mistakes do you see people making in their grows? What do you find yourself saying time and time again? You guys got to improve this. You guys got to fix this particular thing.
You know, I think owners of these businesses need to really understand who they're hiring to manage their businesses for them. There's a lot of great growers that come from their basements. I'm one of those people that came from their basement. I was lucky enough to work in the specialty flower industry, so I had some real world experience, we'll call it. But we see a lot of these businesses hire folks from the basement and come in and expect them to now manage, you know, 10,000 square foot and 20 employees when they've never done that before.
Right.
But they grow the best weed they've ever seen before. That's probably true. But in all reality, you need someone that can come in and really understand and have management experience, understand what it takes to, you know, understand the human resources part of running a business. And there's quite a bit of experience around, or lack of experience around, these growers and understanding what I call lean manufacturing processes. And people look at me when I say lean manufacturing in the cannabis world. Some people think I'm crazy, but some people say, no, I get it, because it's no different than manufacturing a widget for whatever, for a car or for a computer, for a TV, whatever it is. And we've got to look at it through that lens. And for me, I love to hire growers who come from traditional horticulture who have never grown a plant before, especially not in the basement, because they don't have some of the bad habits that I'm an air-filled chief master grower.
Sure.
I'm an air-filled master grower. You know, there's really no such thing as a master grower. I hate to use that term. And we understand that, you know, there's classically trained folks that go to college and get master's degrees in these things, but in all reality, you know, we need folks that are really professionals and have been trained in that setting to come in and run these businesses. The lack of that business acumen is where we see a lot of these businesses are failing. And this is where Colorado originally started, by the basement growers coming out and creating what I call a bro bra industry. I'm part of that bro bra industry. I can't deny my roots and where I've come from. But there's a level of sophistication that I had to learn by failing. And I'll be honest, I've failed hard many a time trying to learn to keep up and understand where the industry was going and how to kind of get to that professional level. And so you've got to look at it through that lens and really bring that type of professionals to the table to work with you, because some of these folks don't have that skill level, and these businesses fail and have issues and problems time and time again. And I'm always called to come in and try to help and repair them, but sometimes the owners won't listen,
right?
Because they really rely on someone who grows the best weed they've ever seen. But yeah, it's losing you money.
Wow. So there's a lot of things, a lot of questions that begs for me personally. Definitely a lack of business acumen and management skills. But wouldn't you also say it's a relationship issue? I think that especially when you're running a business, you know, those relationships, the way you engage with your fellow growers is important, but also just people in the grow community in general. I think that the way we interact with each other, the level of competitiveness and sometimes animosity, I think is a little bit high. And I think we could work on that, all of us in the grow community, of being a little bit kinder to each other. Don't get me wrong, there's tons of support. I've never felt so much collaboration and support as in this community. But don't you feel that growers tend to have some relationship skills sometimes? And a lot of it ties to the other thing you said, which is you said, oh, I failed and I learned from my failures. Some people never really look at their objective failures as failures. Some people never admit defeat and therefore never learn a lesson. You know what I mean?
And that's what it takes to grow and to evolve 100%. And to improve. You know, I've listened to growers tell me, with their egos, and don't get me wrong, man, I used to have an ego, and I've been humbled, and I'm still humbled every damn day. I've still got an ego, but it's not what it used to be when I used to think my shit didn't stink. And so I've been put in my place so many times. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting perspective, and as a community, you know, we all need to come together to realize, you know, this plant is allowing us to now stand up and voice openly that we are using it, consuming it, growing it. Or before, we used to hide in our basements in the shadows, and it's a different time. And
right, that's so true. Yeah, now's the time we need to be compassionate and coming together and not jumping down each other's throats.
Well, and that even comes down to, like, I grow living soil, right? Or we manufacture living soil, and I've been a very connected to this growing methodology for so long, this 04-05. And it's all I really care to consume my vegetables that I grow in the summer with, as well as the cannabis I consume year round. Mm-hmm. And that relationship is important to me. And a lot of people may say, well, why do you think your weed is better than ours? And I'm like, man, I'll never say my weed is better than yours. I'll never say my soil is better than your growing methodology. It's all about supporting each other and knowing that that's what works for you. And this is what you're doing. Heck yeah, man. Kudos to you for having great success and having the opportunity to, you know, to do this and grow that plant.
I just choose
to do it this way. And here's my reasons why. If I've never said it's better and the end product's better. This is what I have found. I enjoy to consume. I like the growing of how the soil works with the plant. I like how I get a better, terpene profile from what my analytics can show me. But it's not better. It's just what I enjoy to consume. And we need to look at it through that perspective as well, so that we're not trying to say that my shit don't stink and yours sucks and mine's better. And we've got to get away from that, you know?
Yes.
It's a paradigm shift that we need to look at through that lens. That is a core value of who I am and what my company stands for. We are trying to be that cage-free, free-range cannabis company. We want to be that whole foods of cannabis. We want to target that conscious consumer. We want people to understand. I mean, like, you see these people who they're only going to wear a certain brand of clothing because it's conscious consumer. They're only going to eat organic this because it's
100%,
that. They don't give a shit where the weed comes from. They don't give a shit where the weed comes from.
Yeah, that's true.
My mind that there's conscious all the way up to that point, but they don't care where the weed comes
good
from.
Good point.
And I'm asking the questions about that. And so, for me, I mean, I'm a unique person. I'm a tree hugging hippie. I went to school at Colorado State University. I have a degree in natural resources, recreation, and tourism. So I had really pounded in my head from a very young age to really look at things from a triple bottom line, meaning
right.
I look at it from an environmental standpoint, a financial standpoint, and a sustainable standpoint. And so I want to understand, you know, how to build a business like that. And so for me, I live my life like that. I eat a plant-based diet, what I call a vegan by six. I eat plants all day until 6 at night, and then I eat meat at night.
Oh, that's sick, man. I love that.
I really try to focus on trying to get organic food into my body. I try to be that conscious consumer of everything I do. So why wouldn't I want my cannabis to be the same way?
100%.
And that's what my brand and company is really trying to come in the marketplace to do, is to be that non-Walmart, I hate to make that reference. I don't see where we're better than that, but that's what a lot of people are running out there is a Walmart or Budweiser style product. You want a little bit of an elevated product. You know, I don't want to say that's a bad product. I just want something different than a McDonald's hamburger.
100%. They serve different needs.
Bad, but it's a little different than that.
Hell yeah, dude. Yeah. Sometimes I want a McDonald's hamburger and I want to make myself sick and get high on all those chemicals. Or sometimes that's all you can afford. I feel like there's room for everybody. I feel like there's room for everybody.
I had Burger King last week. I'm not afraid to deny it. You know, no one's perfect, right?
I like that.
I'm not afraid to admit that, you know? And so,
Yeah, I agree with that. There's a balance.
And for me, the cannabis is important to know where it comes from, just like all your food and everything else.
100%, man. And that's what I'm seeing even on like on a higher level. That's where everything's heading. And that's why I'm such a big fan. One of the reasons I'm such a big fan of this living soil is because I think it's the future. I think this is what everybody's been going to be growing. I think this is going to be the main style for home growers. That's what I believe anyways. All right, before we jump back in with Ellis, let's give some love to today's sponsor, Gorilla Grow Tents, everybody. That's right. Go to GorillaGrowTent.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you free shipping on your order. And members of MyGrowPass.com get 10% off their Gorilla Grow Tents plus free shipping. They're also giving away a tent. Oh, I love these guys at Gorilla Grow Tents. They were frustrated all those years ago. They were frustrated with flimsy grow tents that don't stand the test of time. So these group of San Francisco engineers, growers, and designers got together and created the Gorilla Grow Tent, which is incredible, people. It's the tallest, thickest, and strongest grow tent on the market. It has incredible, thick, durable canvas, steel interlocking poles, easy view windows, double cinching ducting ports. They're all safe, smart, strong, tall, odor-proof, stealthy, insulated, and durable. Truly transcending the term grow tent, everyone. And they have height extension kits. If you really want to get your plants up there, you get a free 1 foot extender, and you can get a 2 foot additional extension for a height of nearly 10 feet, everyone. Incredible. Check out GorillaGrowTent.com if you're ready for a real grow tent that'll stand the test of time. And when you're ready to save 10% plus the free shipping, mygrowpass.com, and you might just win a free grow tent just for being a member, everyone. So check it out, gorillagrowtent.com, promo code GROWCAST for free shipping, just for listening, and members of mygrowpass.com save 10% and free shipping. All right, everyone, let's get back into the show with Ellis Smith. Let's talk more grow strategies, some more grow tips. What do you find are some of the highest leverage moves when you're growing quality cannabis, whether it's, you know, literally anything that jumps to your mind, whether it's a slow, cool cure, or you don't see people topping enough and you want to see more pruning, or whatever it is, monitoring VPD. What do you think are some of the tips and tricks that people are missing out on?
Well, let's start with that very first one you said, VPD, vapor pressure deficit. If you don't have this figured out, and it's really hard too for home growers to really manage this. On commercial, it's a little different. You should have that together, but on a home grow, that's going to be a little bit harder to achieve with your vapor pressure deficit.
Depending on where your space is, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, you know, but at the end of the day, here's some tips for these folks that may be at home but can't really achieve that. And just understand, you know, your temperature gradient is a big thing to look at. Make sure you're not having more than a 10-degree temperature swing, and this will really help the powdery mildew. I like to run my humidity anywhere from 45 to 60% in flowering. Mm-hmm. I find it helps me with transpiration. If I can handle the right temperature swing and understand that, you can really manage that. And keep in mind, kind of coupled with that, always have some type of IPM in place, integrated pest management. Whether you see pest or whether you see mold or whether you don't, you may never see it. Still treat as if you do. Mm-hmm. You want to be proactive versus reactive. Don't have to now go try to mitigate something now because you finally see the outbreak. Always be in front of it. Try to be that reactive or that proactive approach so that you can be in front of it. And so I always recommend treat as if you have PM and treat as if you've got some type of pest. And that means you can use biocontrol. There are some really safe, healthy, organic fungicides to use to combat powdery mildew. Mm-hmm. Even sulfur, burners, sulfur, liquid sulfur, these types of things, man, that thing work wonders for PM. People don't realize what a great tool that is. These are some of those tips, man, those home growers to really, I think, one, you hit it right head on. VPD, your temperature, humidity control, that's your environment number one. You have to get that dialed. Got to get it dialed. That's the first and foremost. Don't even put a plant in there unless you have that figured out.
100%.
And two, like you're saying, you know, once you get to do that, make sure you understand whether you're using a liquid fertilizer or living soil, what that, you know, looks like to be mixing nutrients or to be adding water and pHing or whatever that is. Figure that out. Man, I'm a big fan of topping. And here's my rule of thumb, and this is my opinion and what I have found worked for me. There's 100 ways to skin this cat, and you may hear 10 other ways people doing it, and that is fine. True. And so what I'll tell you is what has worked well for me. I top very aggressively. I'm trying to shape a certain amount of tops on the plant. Mm-hmm. And from my growing style, and this is how I do it for all my commercial settings with SoHum soils, is I grow from a clone into a 1 gallon of SoHum soils in 1 gallon. I'm topping at the first five nodes off that first clone, and then every fifth node I'm topping off every branch until I transplant usually 21 to 25 days after being in that 1 gallon, just adding plain water. I've usually got about 8 to 10 tops already by the time I'm transplanting. So I've already got a nice bushy little plant in a 1 gallon. It's usually anywhere from 14 to 20 inches tall, depending on the cultivar I'm growing.
Oh, I love that. And then you transfer it to your flowering pot?
Yep, into my last container side. And I'm going to give you guys a tip that most people overlook, all right? And this is a big, big issue I see quite a bit.
Ooh, hit me.
Whenever you are transplanting into your next container, say your flowering container, make sure when you go from that, for me, it's my 1 gallon into a 6.6 gallon. I use autopot, so I use what we call geoponics. I'm using hydroponics watering methodology with a living soil. I've cracked the code. It's pretty wild.
So that's cool.
By doing so, what I do is I'm transplanting from my 1 gallon to my final container size. Make sure, no matter you're using whatever size container, make sure you give the plant a minimum of 2 weeks in that new container before you start flowering. If you do not, your plant will not really grow too much outside of that initial 1 gallon size
root zone,
root mass
right.
that you put into it. And you're going to wonder, why didn't the plant do so well? And you'll see at the end, and you dig that plant out and look at the root ball, you'll see it all stuck in that 1 gallon mass versus expanding into the rest size of your container. So I always want to recommend at least minimum 14 days from that transplant before you start flowering. Okay,
that makes perfect sense.
I've learned the hard way, and I've helped talk people through this so many times. They're like, "No, I started flowering in 10 days," and you're exactly right. And so
that's
one thing you walk
man.
Away with that, today. That's one thing I can promise will save your butt.
That sounds okay. That's a little longer than I might imagine. So I like that advice. I totally agree with it. That makes perfect sense. The way you say that works out when you just jump right into flowering. 14 days seems like a long time to me. I like that advice though.
It is. I mean, some people can shorten up with varieties. For me, when I go into autopot, because the way the autopot works is I hand water the first 5 to 7 days and I put it into my autopot. And usually by day 10, that thing is explosive. So depending on your watering and your confidence in the plant's root mass and the height you're getting, that can be shortened. But just a general rule of thumb, I always try to give minimum 14 days.
I like
but
that.
For me, I've vegged for 21 days in that container before I initiate flowering anyway. So I'm going for big biomass. I'm trying to get that, 2 to 3 pounds of light, or that 60 to 70 grams per square foot metric. So we like a lot of biomass.
What do you think of that? Sorry, go ahead.
Even through that 21 days of veg in that S container, I'm topping again every fifth node and I'm getting a bushy plant. So I'm still continuing to shape and really give that plant the look I'm going for.
Yeah, I love that, man. And I want to touch on something you said. You know, you're talking about IPM. And now all the great biocontrols that are out there that are so safe and natural. You take a look at the amazing Dr. Zymes. And, some of the safer brand products and stuff. Are you surprised that people are still using as many detrimental sprays? Although I feel like they're not. I feel like there's less and less of that, like that whole underground market that used to exist in Humboldt, where people would be spraying, Avermectin and Pylon and all this crazy bullshit. Are you surprised that people are still using? Yeah, totally. Are you surprised people are still using this? Are people not using this as much? What are your thoughts on all these new, wonderful, organic, safe sprays?
I mean, I love all the new organic safe sprays. I think that's great. I really have, in our grows, we are really focusing on getting away from as much pesticide use as we can and using biocontrol, really trying to understand and really manage the BPD in these grows to reduce the fungicide sprays we have to use.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't like having to use a lot of stuff. One is labor intensive. Two, I have someone on staff that's certified to spray the crap. Three, there's a liability to my staff to be exposed to this stuff. Before I get audited by the state and I miss that, I can get docked for fines and you lose your license. So for me, there's a lot of pros and cons with biocontrol versus the traditional pesticide. So we're really trying to use, everything we can to minimize our exposure to some of these tools by using other effective tools that are safer, healthier.
Absolutely.
Better for us overall.
What about some non-spray pest control?
I've been kind of removed from the black market, let's say, for so long. I'm not familiar with what I'm seeing for the black market, what these guys are spraying or using anymore. I'm just so far removed from that I could not tell you.
I'm not really in it either, but my general sense, talking to everyone on this podcast, my general sense is that these kind of replacement products really are blowing up, and I hope that leads to less use of the bullshit, out there, but...
let's really encourage our listeners who are growing at home because they're exercising their right. Just to let them know, let's really encourage them to read the labels on what they are using. They'll see how toxic some of these things are, like the Eagle 20, the Avermectin, and so on. And really know that look at safer alternatives, look at products that don't require, crazy separation from your plants for 12 to 18 hours where you can re-enter the room and these things, and just know that these things can be detrimental to your health.
If 100%.
You are going to use them, please follow the instructions and wear the right, face mask and respirators and whatever it is, and cover the skin. Do what they're telling you, because this stuff is bad. I can tell you one of my employees that works for me. He grew up, he's a fourth generation farmer. This guy was exposed to so much pesticides back in the 70s and 80s because of the farming. He had over 30,000 acres at one point. And that dude got this crazy cancer at one point in his life, which he says was a direct exposure to all these different pesticides that he was dealing with as a kid in these fields.
That's so crazy.
So this stuff, period.
It is serious, man. Yeah, it is. And it's funny it's not funny. It's actually sad doing the Coffee, Health, and Science podcast. What really stunned me is... the effect of the pesticides that are used on coffee on the farmers, like you're saying, the people spraying them get these horrible, horrible dosages and end up having all these health problems. So yes, we're focused on the people consuming the product that has the pesticide on it, but the people applying them also get really, really boned, you know?
100%. That's where it boils back down to that conscious consumer. That's why I try to buy organic where you can, try to support companies that
100%.
Aren't exposing their employees to this stuff. That's where this kind of comes full circle.
Yeah, conscious really, capitalism is really, it's not perfect, but that's how we can take this wild and sometimes unruly and chaotic capitalist system and kind of rein it in, is if you apply things like, you know, conscious consuming, if you apply things like having your values in order and purchasing in the free market in alignment with your values, that's huge. Now, that also implies that people are telling the truth. People who are making, you know, the producers are telling the truth. So there's always that side of it. But I think it's about the best we can do right now to affect change is to vote with our dollar and vote wisely.
I agree 100%. And, you know, that trust is hard to find, but luckily we have some good regulatory frameworks in place for some of these to keep them in check, because not everybody is truthful, but
right.
You know, hopefully we can rely on those to police them so that we can just maintain better health and quality of life.
Totally.
You know?
That's the balance, right? The regulation. Now people in the cannabis industry, it's like balancing regulation. Very, very interesting to see where this goes. I wanted to touch back on IPM again, because you mentioned you like to do all sorts of different controls. What are some non-spray controls that you like to do? Do you like to do like diatomaceous earth or cover crops or things like that?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, I have very limited experience with cover crops. Man, I've got some folks that are doing great work with our soil harming cover crops. Now, diatomaceous earth, you know, I've been using that for, 15, 18 plus years. I've been exposed to that product. We actually are tinkering with some of that and some new soil recipes that we're playing with.
Oh, interesting.
Put that into the dirt just as another combatant. It's kind of has a multi-use for us, but the one use really is for help combat any type of pest that may get into the soil. But, you know, for people that may have gnats on their soil coming in or even root aphids that are flying in another soil, diatomaceous earth is great. It's a little tricky if you are top watering.
Right, because if it gets wet, it's ineffective, paste, right?
Turns into a paste almost.
Right.
From our growing methodology with the Autopod, which is a bottom feed capillary feeding system, it works great because we don't have any
Oh, that's genius. So the diatomaceous earth can sit on top untouched by the water? That's genius.
Yep. And so that works great in that aspect. And then, you know, just biocontrol for your plants. A lot of people say, oh, I got a praying mantis or two, and I've got a couple ladybugs. Those are all great, but you really need to look at this from a number standpoint if you are trying to fight pests or mitigate pests. That if you're going to bring in some type of biocontrol, it is a regimen of understanding the life cycle of the pest you're trying to beat.
Right.
And the life cycle of the
predator
you're
introducing. Yeah.
And then you have to understand, you have to have the right temperature and humidity environment to support some of these biocontrols that you want to bring in if they will survive. And so those can be a little tricky, but you can manage it properly, man. They are great tools. And there's a bunch of little critters out there that are out there, from Swarovskis to Californicas to there's a freaking 50 other million names of crazy ones that I can't pick off of my head. But there's great, great stuff that could really do the job. A couple great brands out there you can look at. I'm not going to name any, but just, you know, just look and see what your alternatives are.
Yeah, and that's what I see, is there's lots of options. And it's kind of frustrating as a podcaster, because I'll ask a lot of experts and the first thing they say is what you said. It all depends. Like I go, what kind of predatory bugs excel in this scenario? And they're like, well, it depends on what you're battling. It depends on what your local climate is. It depends on all this stuff. So maybe there will be a little more of a like ubiquitous predatory application, but it does seem like you need to do your research on your local environment, your particular pest problem, and then, like you're saying, do your research on the predator itself.
You bet. And there's actually some great resources out there. I will name one because I think these guys they're rock stars. Urban Grow. This is for the commercial growers. I don't know what they do with the home growers.
Urban Grow?
Urban Grow. They're based out of Colorado here. These guys have a multitude of services. They also have a great design team around HVAC systems that understands VPD. These guys are brilliant at what they do on design. So that's a great group for HVAC systems and dehumidification systems for your grows. These guys are rock stars, but they've got the best IPM program that I've seen out there. You know, my shameless plug for them, but whatever. These guys are great guys.
Oh no, man, we're all about that here. I don't like the anti-plugging stuff of the cannabis industry. I'm here to push back against that. I love giving out good names and links and resources. So Urban good. Grow out of,
yeah, guys,
of Colorado.
Look at Urban Grow because their IPM team, the one gentleman that runs, I'm drawing a blank on his name, I'm going to get through my email in a second. This guy's got over 30 plus years experience in the horticulture space doing IPM for greenhouses and large scale ag.
Oh, wow.
These guys know their stuff.
Right.
And so, how I got turned on to him, I had a buddy to tell me, and he looked straight in the eye, and I've known this guy for 10 years. He says, this guy helped me beat powdery mildew, Ellis. I've never been able to beat powdery mildew. And I says, well, I got to call him, you know? So, these guys are good at what they do.
That's cool,
so,
man.
Check them out.
And they're into that IPM. They're into that, predatory.
They do it all. They can do design, layout on benching, greenhouse, clothes, whatever the heck you guys do. They're a full kind of suite of services. And
funny how there's more and more of those now.
Big group of guys.
Yeah, totally. It's like, yeah, this consultation stuff is really fleshing out, and I'm happy about it. Before we wrap up, let's see here, man. I want to get one more question in. Let's talk about character traits and attributes and attitudes of growers, because this will apply to someone whether they're running a 1,000-foot space or just their little closet grow. What do you find are the character traits that successful growers, master growers, if you will, tend to hold?
Yeah.
You mentioned patience earlier. I don't know if I want to cue you up for that particular character trait, but are there any other ones or anything you want to elaborate on as far as what it takes to succeed?
You bet. Be organized. I mean, the ones I see here do really well are organized. They take copious amounts of notes.
Love that.
I mean, if you don't have a notebook in your grow and you're not writing down things every single day, even if you're just not checking the temperature and humidity and those fluctuations daily, you've got to start to really be tuned into that. But that'll make your job a lot easier. I mean, I'm a huge fan of notebooks and taking notes. I don't understand how I go into these grows. These guys have been running them for years. I'm like, well, what did you do yesterday? Or what did you do the day before? Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
How do you keep up? I mean, I when I manage grows, I have a whole kind of McDonald-ized process. I've got, checks and balances of opening and closing the facility, and you better be checking temp, humidity throughout the day, and I want to see those notes. I want you to tell me, how did the room look today? Meaning there were no dead plants. I removed X, Y, Z dead leaves. I'm seeing a little yelling over here. I need to go tell so-and-so to fix the treatment so that I can fertigate to make sure I address this. I want to see notes so that I go in every day, well, why did this deficiency get so bad? You didn't come in here and take your notes daily like you should.
Right.
Those folks that are really tracking and tracing daily, they're rocking it out the park, I'll tell you.
Funny
it's
how
not
that
hard
works.
To do that. It really isn't.
Yeah. Funny how that works. I think it's Pearson's Law, which is that which is measured, that which is tracked and measured improves.
That's right.
That is Pearson's Law.
Because now you, and I love it. I mean, that's a great quote. I think people should really listen to that because now, once you get your first round done, you can start to say, okay, where can I improve? What can I do on the next round to make it better? And say, okay, I kept the same temperature range. How do I keep the same topping and the same, feeding schedule, blah, 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 blah. You got to have data to improve. Else not, you're just tinkering. It's a hobby. And there's nothing wrong with hobby growing. There's nothing wrong with hobby growing, folks. Have fun with it, man. Here's my leaving point. I hobby grow now at home, only outdoors because I can't grow indoors. I travel too much, and my wife won't grow the weed for me. So I put a plant outside, and every Sunday my workflow is to go and check the reservoir, empty the gallon that's left over from the 10 gallons I put in the week before. Fill it up, and every Sunday, that's my workflow. It's simple. It's hobby. I don't do anything. I may do a couple of topping. I get so lazy now because I work and travel so much, but I love to still have a plant that I harvest every fall and can consume it for 3 months, and I have to go buy it, and I enjoy that.
That's awesome.
It's a hobby for me now. I don't take it as serious as I used to. I don't have notebooks anymore. But for those folks who want to take it that step and really want to, you know, improve and get dialed in and nerd out on it, man, I highly encourage you to just take those notes and utilize that data, like you said.
100%, man. And I want to kind of, you know, round out what you just said, which is something we say on the show a lot. It's all about intent, right? It's all about intent. And that's why I don't like other people crapping on other people's grows, because you don't know what the intent is. I think it's so important to be like, okay, what am I trying to get out of this? What am I willing to put into this? Because that's what a lot of people don't think about, right? They know what they want to get out of it, a bunch of good weed, but they don't realize what they're signing up for. They don't realize how much it's going to consume their lives. They don't realize the responsibility. So getting the intent of your grow right is super important. And then everything else stems from that. And just because you're looking in on someone else's grow who has different intent doesn't mean you can pass judgment, right? It's just not the same thing.
Man, I'm you're making me smile big hearing you say that's a great way to kind of, I think
speaking the same language. We're simpatico.
I love that. I don't know if you do yoga or not, but that's a big thing in yoga is intention, and that's spoken like
right,
a true
buddy.
Yogi. And so, I love it, man. I your intent is what it's all about, and I think that's wonderful. That's a great way to kind of summarize that, I guess.
Man. I'm all about that, and goddamn right, I love yoga. It fixed my shoulder. I did years of physical therapy. It didn't work. Yoga fixed it.
I'm telling you, man, it heals in so many ways. I love it for the physical, and I come out with the mental, what I really love. I'm like, wow, I didn't think I'd get the mental out of it. And today, it really resets you. You know, I'm going in for the whole physical part, you know. So it's good. It's good practice. And I think your intent, like, with people would live their life every day with the right intention, I think they would have a different perspective on how they walk around.
100%, man. 100%. I've said it before on this show. I will never doubt hippies again. So I'm right there with you. You said you're an old school hippie, so I'm holding my second true to my word.
I'm still, man, I don't wear deodorant. I'm a tree hugging motherfucker. And
I'll never Awesome, man. Well, this was super enjoyable, man. Let's make sure to get together. If you're ever out here in the Midwest, and if I ever make my way up to Colorado, which I do occasionally, I'll definitely give you a call. This was very pleasurable to have this conversation with you.
Now, you bet. It was great, Jordan. You ever come to Denver, look us up. Let's have you at the office, man. Have you out to the launch pad and break bread with me and the team. And if I ever make it, you're in Illinois, right?
Yep.
All right. So, yeah, we're doing a bunch of applications there right now. So I'll be coming out there in the next month or two. So we'll look you up. Love to connect.
Sick, man. Love it. Everybody listening, sohumsoils.com. Where are you on Instagram?
I am bad at that. I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
That's got to be at Soham Soils. Find it, everybody. AmericanCannabisConsulting.com. Check out everything that Ellis is doing. Big, big fans over here. Let us know what we can do for you, Ellis. You listeners, follow us at GrowCast. Follow me at Jordan River IG. One more time, Ellis. Thanks so much, man. This was a ton of fun.
Thanks, Jordan. Have a great day. Thank you.
All right, everyone. Be safe and grow smarter. That is our show, everybody. Thank you so much for listening today. I appreciate you GrowCast listeners so much. Shout out to Jay Blanked for doing the beat for the ads. Visit soundcloud.com/JayBlanked to listen to his stuff. Make sure you check out our membership program, mygrowpass.com. You get the discounts on Cultalux and Gorilla Grow Tents and like 10 other products, including some superstores, online hydro superstores. It's incredible what's going on with the discount program, plus the cultivation resources and the podcast. You got to check it out, mygrowpass.com. And finally, shout out to Start2Finish710 on Instagram. Start2Finish710. Check them out for all your consultation needs. All right, everyone, I hope you're killing it out there. This is Jordan River wishing you the best of luck in your grow, thanking you again for being a listener. Stay positive out there, everyone, and be safe. Happy growing out there, people. Bye-bye.